Thank you very much. I apologize to those of you who are very technologically minded, and I will use the blackboard. But I think this is more and more a rare opportunity to have a nice blackboard. I mean, so it's and there is more to it than it seems on the first glance. You know, the in fact, recently we. I mean, people somehow think that white blackboard or projector is somehow more ecological and more modern, you know. And we recently renovated our building in Prague, and of course the architects wanted to put whiteboards everywhere, you know. But I mean, it has nothing to do with ecology or modernity. It's just expensive, you know. I mean, the classical blackboard is three times more expensive than this plastic, you know, stuff, you know, which is then much more expensive, you know, to operate, you know. But this institute has even chalk in the sign, right? So we should use it. Right? It's like experience, nice experience. I just by talking so much and freely in the beginning, let me. It came to my mind a very nice sentence of Steve Jobs. I mean, I think Steve Jobs is a guru, true guru for many people in the audience. And he had a convocation address, which is on YouTube, in Stanford, I think, 6 years ago or 5 years ago. Did anybody see that that address? I mean, I looked at it. I mean, my son told me that I should have a look at it. And so I looked at it, and it's really very nice. It's a really clever man. And he took it seriously, probably. His convocation. It was not. He certainly wasn't sounding blah blah blah, and he said that something to the effect that every experience is good for something, and he was saying, why do you think that Apple has such nice graphics and good fonts, you know? And that's because when I was a young man, I was working in the graphic shop, you know, and I started to like, you know, layout, you know, and I have certain experience with typing or producing the text, you know. So I very much like that that as a reason, you know, why this super company has a good fonts, you know. He said it, you know. Maybe it's, well, it's a fairy tale of old man, you know. One shouldn't take it seriously, but and so. So I'm speaking about my talk has nothing to do with Steve Jobs, you know, so that, yeah. So I'm speaking about first order definable by definable colorings or CSPs. Now what is meant by it, you know, so first order, you have some first order formula, which is standard thing. So you have variables which is defined in the language of relation structures of a certain over a certain alphabet. So mostly we can speak about the graphs. So although I will say a few sentences as well about some structures. So we have variables which are representing vertices, and we have variables which are representing edges, and then we have epsilon, that vertex is a member of one of the set, and then we have a usual connectedness of the first order first order logic, you know, including the quantifiers. I mean, so but we don't have anything else. We don't have sets. We don't know what is a set. I mean, we cannot particularly quantify over sets, even if it would be subsets of some well-defined set. And we as well don't have some other higher tools like induction or something like it. We just write a formula, string of symbols which are well defined, or correct in this language. So such a we get a formula phi. Yeah. So what we can express by it, I mean, we can express, for example, that there exist vertices x, y, z. Such that they are distinct, and such that they x epsilon z form a triangle. Yeah. So that that the XY or we could write there exists three EFG, three edges and three vertices, so that together they form a triangle. That's one of the possibilities. We can say, we can express a negation. I will stop writing it. I know that it is not visible, but this is last line. So we can explain that there are no three vertices, four vertices, ZT, such that they form a K4. So that we can say that the graph doesn't have a K4. But we can concatenate as we wish. I mean, we can have arbitrary many quantifiers, and the formula may be, you know, longer than the abstracts from this whole workshop, you know. So I mean, it's difficult to analyze. I mean, of course, it's difficult. We know that theoretically it is difficult to analyze. And what we would like to express, we would like to say that we speak about coloring, so we would say that the chromatic number of the graph is less than 3, if and only if G satisfies a fixed formula 5. Yeah. So, for example, we would like to say that. Of course we can say it. I mean that G satisfies. This example of such a clever formula could be that G does not contain a K4. There is no complete graph is for vertices, and something else. For example, that G contains a triangle. Right. So you can get something like it. Well, if you see something, you see immediately that this is nonsense, and you get the suspicion that this will be always nonsense, you know. But it's a different thing to have a feeling and to have a proof. And actually, there is not a easy proof or a straightforward proof that actually that it cannot be done actually by the first order formula. But if you have a graph, then you have actually a result, or it's my sign for observation, which I think first in the print is due to Atzerias, maybe Moshe knows an earlier version of it, for graphs, for the CSPH, for undirected graphs, graphs is never first order definable. Yeah. So by this I mean that. What does it mean that G is in CSPH if and only if G satisfies the formula. Yeah. So there for some phi, which is six. And this is never, in fact, this is not true. There exists, as you all know, there is an example when this is first order definable, namely the example that you take a CSP of the K1 over one point. Yeah, this is if and only if, and it's an illustrative example, if and only if G satisfied has no edges. Yeah, has no edges. Well, it depends how you define a chromatic number of the graph which has a loop. Yeah, there is another case which, and there may be even another one that you forbid the one point, and then on the right hand side you have empty graph, you know. But I mean, this is the most non-trivial case among those all the trivial cases. I mean, so this is so they are. I mean, this is sort of positive negative news, you know. I mean, they are no good instances for the, in a certain sense, key canonical example for the graph theory example for a constraint satisfaction. But But this is not all the story, and in fact, I mean, this is in a certain sense very, very confusing example. And then there are many examples of, if you permit, a more complicated structure, then there are other more complicated examples, and they are actually well known. I mean, there is a theorem, which is this classical graph theory result, which we formulated slightly non-standard way, which is due to Galay and Roy. It's actually in graph theory known as Galay-Roy theorem. And when we were somehow investigating this, then we were a little bit searching it, which is by now, of course, easy to search with Claude Tardif, and we found that there are a predecessor of these two guys, or and this is Hasse, Marika Hasse, and Witawer, who actually preceded, I mean, this is around 68, and they preceded it actually, Witawer almost by a decade, who proved the following for oriented graphs, or directed, there are many examples, and an example is that if you denote by PK, this is a path, path of length k, and if you denote by TK, it's sometimes denoted PK plus one, so but I just taking length is the index, and the TK is a transitive closure, it's a linear order with or a transitive tournament with k vertices, then you have that CSP of the transitive tournament with k vertices is equal to what? It's equal to this, that there is no homomorphism from PK into well, the class of all G, sorry, such that G has, there is no homomorphism from PK into G. And this is usually formulated, this is one of the few criteria for the high chromatic number, I mean, which are somehow lower bound for high chromatic number. It's usually formulated that the graph has chromatic number bigger than k, if and only if in every orientation of its vertices you will find an oriented or monotone path with of length k plus 1, and with k plus 1 vertices. So this is, there are infinitely many of those, and in fact this is sort of a top of iceberg, and that sort of motivated these examples, sort of motivated the notion which we defined a very long time ago. I mean, this is almost the same age as quoted constraint satisfaction problem themselves in the mid of 70s with Poulter, who was my supervisor. We formulated the notion of the homomorphism duality. And as exactly expressing the same in modern language, it could be expressed as the following, by the following, that it be denoted by forp f. So suppose f is a finite set. The finite homomorphism dualities are investigated. In fact, there are several lectures which will follow my lectures. I mean, I think Claude will speak about dualities, and Jan Fonjak will speak, I mean, at least partially about dualities, and they may speak about infinite dualities. I'm speaking only about the finite dualities. If it's a finite set of graphs and structures, and so this is the class of all structures which have so that if f is f, then that. There is no homomorphism from F to G. So forbidding, this is sometimes reserved for subgraphs or induced subgraphs, of course it has many meanings, and sometimes people put here H, that's for forbidden sense with respect to the homomorphism. Yeah. And the finite homomorphism duality is the pair F and H, or sometimes D, such that CSP H is equal to the fourth S. I'm forbidding. Thank you much. Yeah. I mean, these arrow notations are dangerous, so you really saved me. I mean, if I wouldn't correct it, then I think the everybody in the hall would be then completely confused for the rest of the day. So I mean, if there is such a equation, which is non-trivial equation, it's equation of classes. I mean, so the claiming that for any graph either belongs to both of them and to none of them, then you say that you have a homomorphism duality. I'm not going to, this is sort of motivation for my talk, I'm not going to speak about it. This was well studied, I mean, and in particular we proved with Claude Tardif a theorem which Sylvia Lothen yesterday, Cynthia, Lothen mentioned as well. We proved a theorem with Claude Tardif about 10 years ago, a little bit more than 10 years ago, that if you have a finite set of graphs, set of relation structures, then the following two statements are equivalent. That's a sign for the following two statements are equivalent. First is that F is a finite set of relation trees, and or say F is home equivalent . I mean, we are speaking about existence and non-existence of homomorphism as usual in CSP, and so we just restrict it's up to, we work up to homomorphism equivalent, so something like it has to be here. So F is homomorphism equivalent to a final set, and there exists H, I have applied he, like D, like a dual, so there is this D such that CSP F is equal to V. Is equal to 4 that. And now one shouldn't say about our result that it is a nice result, but I think it's a nice result. I mean, so it has really such a beautiful context, and it has so many variants of the which are still going until today, and it really is there are various proofs of it, and actually it implicitly appears in various by publications or by in the context of various nice mathematics, including to Feder-Vardy paper is as well containing actually the construction, implicitly construction of the dual for a general finite set of relation trees, and what is related to it? I mean, for example, you can formulate it. I mean, in both directions are non-trivial. I mean, it's not clear in either way. I mean, for example, what is it related is that if say F. It's non-trivial even at the beginning if the graph has only one element, and if it is oriented graph is here I want to mention that it was actually the first non-trivial example was found by my student Komarek at that time, who showed that actually that for this is equal to CSP of the strange orientation of the pentagon. If you see something like it, you get suspicious, right? There has to be something there, and then the theorem is basically saying that here can be arbitrary relation relation 3. And it's related, I mean, to what is related to it, I mean, it's actually by now we understand it very well. I mean, it's it has a category theory formulation, it's motivated to do things like hating algebras somehow the proofs can be mimicked in quite very general algebraic and category theory formulation. It says related, I mean, these jewels are beautiful, these are beautiful objects, I mean, they are related to the power graphs, power structures. And it's related to the, it's basically the, it looks like our motivation, actually certainly our motivation a long time ago with Poulter was somehow the actually good characterizations or somehow algorithmic consideration. It really, I like looking at it as at the nice, easy instances of coloring problems. It appeared a little bit surprisingly that equivalently it can be formulated in terms of homomorphism order or in the partial order terminology on partial order investigated in partial order setting. For example, this if it is single object, then this pair FD are in one-to-one correspondence with gaps in the homomorphism order, and the so-called connected gaps, I mean there's a connectivity, connected gaps in the homomorphism order. It's related to the maximal antichains, I mean that actually the situation is not completely clarified until today. So it has many reformulation. It's related to the universal objects, I mean. And after maybe I say, you know, what it basically means, it means that you take this, let me take a picture. Here's a misleading example of the homomorphism order. So for undirected graphs where we know that it doesn't exist, but I mean just making a picture. And what does it mean? So you take f and you take everything what's above, right? I mean in the homomorphism order. So it's actually this. You take all the graphs which permit homomorphism from f, and then you take the complement. And that complement should have the funny property that here is a point which is called D, and so that everything what is not here is under it. Yeah. So it's actually in this, so D is equivalently, it's a maximal element, or in fact greatest element, it's actually uniquely determined by greatest element of this forp F. So if you see that, then you can study it, or you see that it is somehow related to this partial order. In fact, they cannot be related, so it's antichain, it's a maximal antichain, and actually these are equivalent formulation for it. So these duals are very, very nice. I mean, for example, I want to mention they are characterized. I mean, you don't have to. So this is one-way street, right? We characterize in the theorem. We characterize all those things which are on the left, so that there exists a dual on the right. You can as well characterize those D for which there exists F, and that was done by Cynthia Benoit and the Clot. It's a very nice characterization, which is in fact an NP. It's on the first glance not clear whether this condition is decidable. So it's very nice. Okay, so this is somehow related to the. I think this. I mean, I'm just explaining why I think this theorem is interesting. And but I think this is sort of well understood. What is the reason? Okay, that there is a third condition. So in that theorem, and that third condition was proved by first by Acerias directly, and I will say in a second that it follows from something else directly, and that's the thing that for F this is and this this fourth F or CSPH, I mean CSPV are the only, or such CSP are the only first order definable CSP. So I mean these finite dualities are actually fitting to these logical theorems, sometimes called meta theorems, which somehow give a somehow syntactical characterization of something that is coming, say, from combinatorics, where this is the case. So we know that if we started on the left by somehow introducing that first order definable CSP, we know exactly which are those. Those are CSPs which are coming from forbidding finitely many relation trees. Now that was proved by Acerias directly, but there is another proof which came almost immediately, and that is a beautiful result by Rossmann. Ben Rossmann, who proved the following theorem, which I think it's one of the modern highlights of the finite model theory, and it's highly regarded in that field, and it says the following: suppose that a C is a first order definable homomorphism preserved class. It's not a nice wording. What I mean by it, I mean that if A is a relation structures or graphs, if you want, if A is in C and you have a homomorphism from A to B, then from that follows that B is in the C as well. So suppose that you have a first order definable homomorphism or class which is closed on homomorphism, or which is preserved, where the homomorphisms are preserved in this sense, then C is a first order definable, but it's a positively existential positively definable, so it's sometimes the note F plus, and that has very much combinatorial meaning, because this is equivalent, or this is actually the same thing as if you have no negation, how the formula look like, if you have existence, that you have existence, and then something holds, so you are basically saying that in the graph you will find something, so this is the same thing that there exists a finite set, formula is finite set, such that the structure, I will not use this well, but I can use it now. So such that A is in C if and only if there exists F in F, such that F goes into A. And then we are home. Okay, so I mean you see that if you have a if you have a CSPD and you take the complement of it, then so this is subclass C, this is homomorphism preserved by composition of mapping. If something was not going to the D, then and you have homomorphism somewhere, it will again not go into D. So it's a homomorphism preserved. And if it is first order definable, then there exists a F, by the Rosman theorem, which is defining as a forbidden, as a forbidden, which is defining by this forbidding this f defines a c. So that is closing that. So this this is sort of characterizing in a non-trivial way all the first order definable constraint satisfaction problem. What are those? Those are those which are defined by forbidding finitely many relation trees. I don't have to define relation tree because Cynthia did it before me. But this is so. This is that we understand. But I want to speak about something what is more recent and which is related to the talk of Patrice Osonade Mendes in this morning. And I will not use almost anything what he was saying, but actually it's related, and what I will use I will define. So if you were not here in the morning or if you were sleeping, then don't start to sleep now. So I mean, there is no reason for it. So we define what's a restricted duality. Well, the restricted duality, I mean, what was the duality? So the duality was the equation that f does not go, speak about the singleton, f does not go into g if and only if g goes to d. So we restrict it, so we just assume that it holds for any g in some class, the class C. So it would be C restricted duality. I mean, there are much more examples of this, right? I mean, this is and it's for example, C can be finite. I mean, then it's easy to. We don't say anything about where the d and f are lying. They need not be there. So it just means this, that we have this mystical class C, and if we take a f, and we forbid it. Or we take everything what's above f, then this is in this complement of it is exactly everything what is under the g. So we just want so that the restriction of these two ideals and to this filter to the c is actually complementary. So that's obviously easy to achieve in some cases. For example, if C is finite, we permit that if C is finite, and in fact, this is important case that if C is finite, it will be clear in a second. It's even, for example, if you there are other important classes of graphs. For example, it's very much studied what is the minimized size of the D if the class C is just the set of all orientations of the given graph, and what you are forbidding, Digon arcs there in back, and then for the minimal size of this, it's related what's called the oriented chromatic number, which is actually quite complicated parameter, and this is exactly this question for a finite set. So for it can be, I mean, maybe some of you know. I mean, for example, questions like universal universal tournament, which is universal for all element n element graphs. You know, that was studied long time ago by Graham and Chung, for example. I mean, these are questions of this type for finite time, but there are infinite examples, and two are sort of motivating it, what we are after, and the first one is due to Hegquist and Hell. There is a rule that you always have to please the president of the session, so that I now try to be nice to the president, you know, by quoting his one of the deepest theorems which he ever proved. That is the following. I mean, fix some D, and take a letter C, with a class of four graphs, which have the property that the maximum degree is less than D. And then the following holds: if F1 up to Ft are finitely many graphs, then there exists a graph, let's say H, such that CSP, P is PH, is exactly intersected with C. That should be D here, but I mean, I'm not investing any other. It's equal to 4P F. And what usually one, consider here, not that that is H should belong to the class itself. That somehow too much to ask. I mean, that was investigated too by several people. But what is usually good to assume that the H is as well in this for class. So, for example, yes, moment, yes. Yeah, that is for arbitrary set of graphs. It's a finite set of graphs, but they don't need to be trees. And it doesn't hold for anything else. And this unrestricted, the unrestricted theorem for the class of all relation structures of given type holds, it's characterizing this duality, and the duality is equivalent that in the core cannot be a cycle. But if you restrict it, and you restrict it, for example, for bounded degree, then you can make something everything. Actually, it has to be, the FI has to be connected from a previous reason. Well, otherwise, you would get the CSP of one graph, but you would get a generalized CSP. Yes. I mean, this is actually a nice result, which is saying that there is abundance of the restricted dualities for the class of bounded degree graphs. I mean, we call this that in this sense we say that C has all restricted dualities. What more, right? You can forbid any finite family. Yeah. This is not too difficult result. The construction of this H is explicit, and it's actually very nice, and it's close to things which are appearing, for example, in the local chromatic number. I mean, there is a similar construction. This is another example. And which was actually motivating for Vasi's power. So take a C, all planar graphs. Let's start with motivating as example, and take a triangle, right? So you have a triangle, and you forbid the triangle in the graph, in the planar graph. Yeah. So what you get? Yeah. Well, if you get the chromatic number is bounded, is by 4, it is a deep and very nice Grotius theorem, this best proved by Karsten Thomassen. I mean, from this follows that the G goes into triangle. It's actually psychomatic. Yeah? It's not trivial. It's a four. You get from four to three, right? I mean, the planar graphs are domain of the, but it matters whether you say 5 or 4, you know, or 4 L3, you know, and then the gradient of the it's very, very steep. So instead of 4, you get 3. But the triangle goes into triangle. That's not exactly what we would like to have. So that's that exit we would like to have here, H, which does not contain a triangle, and which would still have the property. Now that's not easy question in a way, and there are some warning examples. For example, if you take a KM, big complete graph, and you subdivide every edge twice, so you put a double subdivision of every edge, that KM path, I mean, it obviously does not contain a triangle. It is quite sparse. It has average degree 2. I mean, average edge density is 2. I never know if it is 2 or 4. I mean, so that's average degree is 2, and almost 2. But if you take it to any graph H. H fixed graph, then there will be a triangle here. Yeah. It's easy to see because, I mean, these vertices, which were, you have this edge which was subdivided, right? Well, these original branching vertices of the subdivision, they cannot be identified. If you identify them, you get a triangle just from the past. Once you get a triangle, you will get never rid of the triangle. There are no groups. So I mean that then any such thing contains it. So why? I mean, and this is even degenerated graph. Planar graphs are degenerated. So certainly it will not. This argument will not follow like by the five color theorem, or it will not follow from a degeneracy of the graph. Still, it is true. So and put it here. That's actually what we proved with Patrice some time ago. That was our start of our research, joint research. We proved that planar graphs C equal to planar has all restricted dualities. That not only if you forbid a triangle, you will find such a H, but you can forbid what you want. I mean, you can forbid odd cycle, for example. You can forbid any finite family of a class of a graphs. Forbid them as a homomorphism, in the sense as homomorphism. So it means that you forbid pentagon, you are forbidding as well triangle. I mean, so this is in the nature of the problem. Somehow to forbid things which are induced subgraphs or subgraphs only, you wouldn't get the generality here. And in fact, in a way, it would boil down, I think, to the same results. So the class of all planar graphs has the property, if you forbid finitely many graphs in the homomorphism sense, there exists H, which as well doesn't contain any of those graphs, and which is universal, which is a dual for the class of all planar graphs. So then somehow that the proof of this, the original proof was actually non-trivial. It follows from some results which are elected Robertson and Seymour, and particularly it involves at one step, it uses results which we are using structural theorem. And so it's a complicated result. We were searching to understand actually what are these classes which have all restricted dualities, and but in a certain sense we can characterize them now, and that I want to present you in the rest of my talk. So. erase this. So I mean, in a certain sense, these bounded degree graphs and the graphs which are planar, I mean, here using just this this blackboard, you don't need to assume that it is a class of all planar graphs. You can replace it by the proper minor closed class, proper minor closed. But this example, which was here with the subdivision, is showing you that you need something, some iterative, or something more than that the degrees are. If all degrees are small, you have always restricted dualities by Hecke's hell. If the degrees might be unbounded, as they are for planar graphs, I mean, it may be still true, but I mean, just the degrees are not enough. And then there were a sequence of results. Which culminated the following theorem, which is sort of present the sort of largest class of strongest theorem of this type about the all restricted dualities is the following. Let C be the class with bounded expansion. I will remind it in a second. Then C has all restricted dualities. It's a dangerous abbreviation, I think. It's in Germany. It's some station. I mean, it's like BBC. So that's. It's not ARD? I think they have ARD as well. I mean, so, yeah. Allgemeiner Rundfunk Deutschland? So, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I think they had, there is, well, but I'm not sure. Yeah. ARD is certainly. Okay. So, so it has all restricted. All restricted dualities. So this covers examples which are there. There are comments on it. Well, first of all, what is bounded expansion? I mean, that I just recall. I will say it in slightly different terms. You have a class C, and decrease the C should have the property that there exists some constant, say K0, such that maximal average degree, so it means average degree of taken maximum of all the subgraphs of a given graph G, the maximal average degree is bounded by K0. Yeah. Now, that's first condition. The second condition is, I mean, that's not enough, right? Because that was the example which we have there. This double subdivision of the complete graph has small average degree. Now, what you do, you close it on the subgraphs, but you take a C1, you take the all graphs from C, all graphs which you get. Obtained by contraction of a star system. So I mean, I take my graph and I take some stars. One point is a star. I mean, the cherry is a star. You know, one edge is a star. They are disjoint. I contract them in the usual sense, If there was multi edges, I just consider it as a simple graph, a simplification. I get certain graph, and the result of all such contractions I will call C1. Yeah. So particle I take all subgraphs, you know, it contains a C. Yeah. And what I assume that the maximum average degree of the G for every, so it's in G and C, in the G in C1 is again bounded, but by K1, by something else. Potentially bigger, of course it has to be. Potentially bigger. And you continue. And so then you define C2, that's already full generality. I mean, C2 is obtained from C1 as was obtained C1 from C. C2 is all graphs obtained by contraction of the A that was in C. Yeah, all graphs obtained by contraction of star systems in the graphs in C. So C2 is contraction of all star systems in the graphs from C1. And it should be, the maximum average degree of the G. Should be bounded by K2. And so on. Forever. Yeah. And if this holds, then you say that the graph has a bounded expansion. Then class has a bounded expansion. So all these examples have it because, why? Because if you have a planar graph and you are doing this star contraction, then nothing happens because this is a minor closed class. So all these classes are the same for the minor closed classes, and so nothing is going on. And we know that the minor closed classes are degenerated. You can express this just by saying that all these classes are degenerated. For any I, the class CI is degenerated. Union is not generated. I mean, for example, if you take the example where it goes to infinity, is the first example. If you take the cubic graphs, and cubic graphs, of course, have a maximum average degree bounded, you know, and if you take a C1 from it, then if you contract a star, then you may get the degree 6. Right? So, I mean, you are getting degree 6, and so this is 3, this is 6, and so it exponentially grows. And at union of all those is actually a class of all graphs. Yeah. Still, it's a scaled, it's a parameterized, it's parametrized in a in nice way into the degenerated classes. So they all have all these yes?
All of them, but not the union.
I say that the C is bounded expansion if these CIs have this property. Yeah. We say that if this that was what Patrice said was look at it as in the time this. So we have C in zero time, then we have a C1 in one time. So if in every time we are getting degenerated classes. Now why? I can stop any time. I have 1 minute. Okay. Thank you very much. Just because I'm somehow speaking about your theorems, right?
But
so,
anybody's here, and you can keep talking.
So we have this all restricted dualities, and actually the essential part of this is this bounded tree with decomposition. So the essential part of it, if something is a bounded expansion, then it means that from that follows that, and this is actually key and hard result, that for every p there exists so this is c, there exists some constant n pc, and this existence can be actually it's a large constant, but actually what will follow can be tested algorithmically with like a linear time, of course with some constants which are high. So there exists NPC. such that any graph in our any G in C has what we call low tree depth decomposition. The composition which was described by Patrice, it's a partition of the sets V1, V2 up to V with capital N, is the property that if you take any P element or at most P sample of the P levels, what you will find here, so if you take a G restricted to any P levels, then this has a three depths. Not a three width, three depths, I mean at most. So it was P prime, at most P prime. Yeah. And that's from homomorphism point of view, fantastic thing. I mean, because it's a really modern, and then it seems on the first glance. I mean, if you take graphs which have a three depths, at most P, but they are only finitely many. Well, in quotation, right? Almost infinite. So I mean, exactly, erasing this, only finitely many cores. If you take minimal graphs up to homomorphism, they are only finitely many. For every P, they are finitely many. For every P, I mean, there are more and more of them, but they are only finitely many, depending on P. I mean, this is one of the misleading things for P equal 1. It's a deep theorem that you can find yourself that there is only one. This is one point. For P equal to 2, there is as well only one. And this is one edge, you know. And I think Zdeněk Dvořák has an explicit list of these cores for P equal to 4. I think P equal to 4, they are already a little bit more. It grows by, it's misleading, it grows by 2 to P times. Yeah. So it grows, I mean, it's a large set. And it's somehow fitting, because that beautiful result of Rossmann, which I am saying, is essentially using this finiteness, and he speaks about the three depths, and which is it's related to the quantifier rank in this setting. He proceeds by induction of the quantifier rank, and the finiteness, which his theorem is about finiteness, he has to produce this formula. I mean, it's a finite object. It's actually coming from the finiteness of the three depths. And here you have a finitely many, so in these P levels you can forbid what you want in the homomorphic sense, and then you have to bustle it to the whole thing, and that can be done. Now let me state, now we have a characterization almost characterization of all restricted dualities. And in fact, this is all. I mean, these bounded expansion classes are exactly, in a certain sense, exactly the classes which have all restricted dualities. And let me formulate it as two theorems. And these are fairly recent results with Patrice and. One shouldn't change the name of anybody, you know. I mean, but Patrice was using this abbreviation, so I just copied it from his slides, you know. So he invented it in the morning himself. So the theorem is that let the C be a class closed. On reorientation, it will be about graphs. I mean, or let me formulate it as follows: let's C be a class of graphs. Then the following statements are equivalent. First, the class C of of all orientations of graphs in C. Has all restricted dualities. So if we consider oriented graphs, so that the symmetrization, which are coming from one symmetrization, so any all orientations of the, so this, or the class which is invariant on reversal of arcs, so the class of all orientations of some theta has all restricted dualities, and the second condition is that C, this undirected underlying, has bounded expansion. So this is what we had. I mean, so if we know that the oriented graphs are coming from, if we have a class and we are looking for restricted dualities in the corresponding oriented graphs, then it is equivalent to the restricted. Yeah. And the second, thank you, Paul. And second, I want to stay because it's suppose for C, again equivalent will first. First, if all subdivision, or the topological closure of C, all subdivisions of graphs in C have all restricted dualities, and secondly, C is bounded expansion. So if the graph is somehow closed on the, it's topological closed, if it's closed on the subdivisions, and the third one, for every p, there exists HP, such that HP has girths, in fact, odd girths, a p, such that CSP. HP is first order definable. So if we know that infinitely many of the increasing odd girths graphs CSP, C intersection of CSP is a first order definable. And so, I mean, this sort of is closing a little bit the project. Of course, we don't have the full classification, but I mean, this is a classification of all classes. I mean, so I don't know whether, but I think this, I found this, at least at this moment, satisfactory. Thank you for your attention.